Hello and welcome. Welcome once again to the Start, Scale, and Succeed podcast. It's the only podcast that grows with you through all seven stages of your journey as a founder. I'm your host, as always, Scott Ritzheimer, and I talk with a lot of founders, many of whom have finally built something real. These are very successful founder CEOs. They've got an executive team. Their company is running well, maybe even a little too well, but that's another episode for another time. But it's a real enterprise, real value on the table. But one thing that I found is so many of them have a massive blind spot, and that is that they've never actually sat down and thought about what happens when a crisis hits. Their plan is basically, hey, we're smart, we'll figure it out. We always have, we always will. And this is especially true for those who are in the chief executive stage. But here's what makes this so dangerous at this level and at this stage is that you've spent years building this thing. You've got customers who now depend on you. You have employees who bet their careers on you. You might have investors who've entrusted you, the family of all of these folks. There's a lot of people who count on you. And all of it, every bit of that value can evaporate in a matter of days if the right crisis catches you the wrong way. And so the irony of it is that you finally have the organizational maturity to build a real crisis system, but most founders at this stage don't do it because nothing bad has happened, at least not yet. They're protecting everything except the one thing that could take it all away. So we're not going to handle this alone. Today's guest has spent 30 years helping organizations prepare for and navigate their toughest storms. Mike began his career in broadcast journalism as an on-air reporter, as well as a director and producer. Following that, he spent 5 years as press secretary to Kansas Governor John Carlin. Mike founded Barclay Public Relations in 1987. He built the firm into a national leader in crisis management, influencer relations, and cause branding and employee engagement. Mike became nationally recognized as a leader in both crisis management and cause branding and served as the chair for IPREX, a global group of independent public relations firms. He believes that the earlier an organization includes crisis planning in their overall business planning process, the better off they'll be. And he's here with us today. Mike, welcome to the show. Excited to have you here. This is a topic that we've all bumped into, but I don't know that we've ever addressed here on the show. So I'm really excited about that. And I want to jump in with this question. So I've heard you say somewhere in the research as I was getting ready for this, that the crisis doesn't have to be your fault to impact your business. What do you mean by that? And why is it so important?
Well, there's three positions you own in a crisis. When you're only can own one. You can be the victim. You can be the villain, if you will, or you can be the bystander. And by that, I mean, nothing you did caused the crisis. There was a situation where we had three of our clients involved in, as three of about 300 or 400 brands in the country, where a company, a food product company, mishandled how they did not handle their food well. They made peanuts. And of course, peanuts go into everything. This company had a horrible record of food safety. They finally it finally caused some problems, and they were giving their product to, like I said, 300 to 400 brands. We had three of them, and all of a sudden now our clients, through no fault of their own, other than they bought their peanuts from this company, now it's facing a crisis because we had to make sure that all of their customers knew, hey, we've taken things off the shelf. We checked. We don't. Products we have that use those products, they're off the shelf. We had to go through all that. And of course, then they got to find new vendors, you know, so it causes a business disruption. So that's what I mean by it. I mean, this is a company. And by the way, 6 months after this all happened, that company was out of business and they'd been in business for decades.
Wow.
That's what can happen. And they caused, as I said, 300 to 400 other companies to have to deal with it. So you can be doing everything right and still have a problem.
Yeah. Yeah. It's fascinating. So, knowing that a big part of this may not even be your fault, how do you help your clients start to root out where their most, well, for lack of a better term, critical crises may come? The biggest risk, how do you help them assess that?
Well, we created a process in the early 90s. We had a client to hire us. They were a fast food company. They were in 15 states at the time. Now they are national. But their head of PR approached me and we started talking. She said, I'm really worried. She said, we're growing so fast. I don't know if we're going to be ready to handle a problem. So first of all, there's somebody in the organization looking out for the future, which hopefully everybody listening to this has. If you're not doing it yourself as the head of the organization, hopefully you got somebody thinking about it. We put our teams in a room. We came up with a simple process. And step two of that process, after you form your team, and so that's the most important thing, is that as a CEO, you need to pick the team of people that represent a cross-section of your company's functions, and you need to select someone to run that team. And now you need to instill in them the fact that this is now part of your job. It's just as important a part as what I hired you originally to do, but now you're part of this team. Then we take that team, and to your question, we put them in a room, and we ask them to come with a little bit of homework. Come in with a list of things that you think can go wrong. So usually 6 to 8 people is a nice size, depending on the size of your organization. It can be fewer, but I wouldn't have more than 8. But you, all of a sudden, if you and I are part of that team, Scott, you're going to bring in your list. I'm going to bring in my list. And 6 other people are bringing their list. And some of our crises will overlap, but I'm going to have stuff you didn't have. You're going to have stuff I didn't have. And all of a sudden, we would always ring the room old school with the poster notes, not on the screen, on the computer. I want that room filled, because now everybody's looking around the room going, oh boy, okay, I get it now. There's 103 things that can go wrong. So that's where you begin the process of just simply identifying what can go wrong. And if you've done that step, you're now halfway home, because you're now on the board. You can start thinking about, wait a minute, are there things we can be doing to prevent some of these from ever happening, or at least mitigate them from being worse than they could be? So now you're doing what we call real crisis management, because now you're looking at your organization saying, wait a minute, if we change this policy or change that approach, we might mitigate that from ever happening. And we can maybe take it off the list of things that can go wrong. So now before you even have a crisis, you're beginning to think about what can we do to make sure it doesn't happen again. So that was why that was such an important part of the process, was just getting people to simply identify what can go wrong.
Right, right. So important. When you're putting together a team like this, I would imagine most of the folks listening don't have a team in place. And one of the things they might be thinking is, who would lead something like that? So how do you go about picking a leader, most importantly, and then helping them staff the right people from around the organization?
Well, you look at your organization, and let's say you've got, you know, 6 divisions or 6 departments, let's say. Well, you'd want a representative from every key function of the company. Let's use the word function. Every key function should have one person representing. And then out of that, I think then the CEO, that's one of the things you're getting paid for, is to, you know, who can be the person who can corral this group. And keep in mind, all these people have day jobs. This is now, we're just adding this to their list because we know that they will be, in a time of crisis, the people that can help us get through it. So you just pick the best person. I think you're looking for somebody, obviously, with leadership skills, good communication skills, able to manage up and down. They're able to tell the CEO, wait a minute, that's not a good idea. When the CEO comes up, maybe we should do this. You'd have somebody who can manage up and say, no, that's not a good reason, a good thing to do. And so that's what you're looking for, is a good leader who can do that. And sometimes that is maybe your head of communications. You know, they'll be part of the team, and that may be the person just because of the role they play already.
Right. Right. Some folks might be forgiven for mistaking this for their strategic planning process. How is this different from strategic planning?
Well, I would consider it a subset of strategic planning. So anytime you're going into a strategic plan, there should be a line item of crisis planning. And if you've put our process into place, we call it crisis track, if that's in place, then your part of your strategic planning is just to go back and make sure that everything's up to date. Are there new risks that can occur that we haven't thought of before? Are there, again, reviewing, are there things we could be doing to help mitigate any of these things from happening? So to me, that's part of your strategic plan. It should just be a review every year, or every X, however you do it, but usually every year, a review of your crisis planning process. It's just part of your strategic plan, because they think about it, all the positive stuff you're doing, all of the investment you're making in promoting your company, promoting your products, your services, everything you're doing takes a hit if a crisis happens and you're not ready. So to me, if it's not part of your strategic plan as a core element, I think you're missing it.
Hi there, this is Scott. Thank you so much for listening. We're going to get back to the show in just a few seconds, but first, I wanted to let you know about my brand new Founders Evolution Quiz. If you're a founder, business owner, or CEO who feels overworked by the business you lead and underwhelmed by the results you're getting, you're doing it wrong. Succeeding as a founder all comes down to doing the right one or two things for right now. So take the quiz today at foundersquiz.com. Again, that's foundersquiz.com. And in just 10 questions, you can figure out what stage you're in so you can focus on what's going to work and say goodbye to everything else. Now, back to the show. So on the other side of this, I think an interesting challenge once you start to get into it is you get those sticky notes all over the room. It can be a little overwhelming, right? There's a lot of things that can go wrong. There's a lot more things that can go wrong than go right to some extent, right? It's probably an infinite number of both. So I don't know that that's mathematically correct, but I can see it, especially over time, getting easy to get a little disillusioned by all the things that can go wrong, or to get a little worried about all the things that can go wrong. How do you help folks to strike? Was it Collins talked about productive paranoia? How do you keep this to being a productive part of the planning process?
Well, it gets into once you've established what can go wrong, that the next step that we would encourage those teams to take is to now identify a recent situation you had, crisis. And sidebar here, crisis, everybody think, here's the word crisis, you think something big. It doesn't have to be. It can be something that's just kind of a small, more silent crisis, but it still can snowball. So a recent situation, and walk through it from the time the crisis began till the time you solved it and it was ended. And what were the steps that you took all the way through? What inevitably happens when we go through that part of that process is we learn that there are steps that were two, three people were doing the same thing. Two or three things didn't get accomplished as soon as they should have. And it all resulted in maybe the crisis going on longer than it needed to. So we set that aside and then we say, okay, now let's map out how we want to handle crises going forward. And let's pick out the steps. Every crisis will be different, but there are a certain number of things that you're going to do regardless. And let's get a list of those things we absolutely have to do. A lot of those revolve around early communication with key audiences. A lot of those will revolve around making sure that the team is activated, making sure you have a backup team that's taken over the roles of the crisis team in their regular job, so your business doesn't suffer while the crisis is going on. You got to keep the trains moving. And so those are all steps we put in place. And now we've got a map of, okay, these are 10 things we're going to do when the crisis hits. The next step is we create a message, go back to our risk, create three to five key messages for every risk. So now, to getting back to your question, is we're getting off of defense and onto offense. So now, yes, we've realized there's a lot of things that can go wrong, but now we're putting things, steps in place of what we're going to do. We have messages ready to go so that we don't have to sit in a room for 2 hours thinking of what we're going to say. We can get a message out the door like that to all of our key audiences. And now we're on offense. And once you're on offense in a crisis and you stay on offense, it's going to end faster, I guarantee you. And it's going to end better than it might have if you weren't prepared. And that's what gets back to me being part of your overall strategic plan is just this. You need to have this in place all the time.
I may get this quote wrong. I think it was Dwight Eisenhower who said, plans are meaningless, but planning is everything. And so I think there's a certain benefit of this, at least in my experience, of just the process of walking through thinking about what the crisis might be. I'm not hearing you say you need to know what every crisis is and have a plan for every single potential crisis.
No.
Right? But I correct me if I'm wrong, but I think a big part of the value of doing this planning is just getting the reps on thinking through how would we respond to a crisis that came up. Would you agree?
Totally agree. And to hammer home your point is it's not about a plan for each crisis. It's about a plan to manage any crisis.
Yeah.
Because again, it comes back to not thinking about one thing that can go wrong and is going to take us south, but it's about any of these can happen. But as long as we now know our first 10 steps, we know what we're going to say. We've got a team in place that's managing it now every step of the way. The CEO is engaged with the team And now you've got, you know, it, and then it becomes part of your ongoing operations. That's what I love. I want founders and CEOs to think about. You know, it's just like your marketing plan. It's just like your communications plan. It's like your sales plan. You have plans in place and people running those. This is the crisis team and they're running the crisis when it happens. And you need to be engaged from the standpoint of making sure you're hearing what everything that's going on, but you let them manage it and they bring to you the solutions. Okay, here's the next step we need to take and get the CEO to sign off. And so it becomes just like you would with any other team within the organization. Just treat it normally. And that gets back to your point of it's not about worrying about it. It's about staying on offense and understanding that we're now way ahead of the game. And here's what everybody has to understand is everybody's looking on. I mean, if this is something that's out in the media now, everybody's looking on. Your employees are looking on. How, you know, people aren't involved directly, but they're looking on. How are we handling it? They go home at night and their neighbors are saying, what the hell's going on over at your place? You know, we want them to be prepared. We give them the key messages. Yeah, here's what we're doing. Yeah. Your key customers, all of your customers, but certainly your key customers may get the special treatment of the phone call or the let's take a cup of coffee over and I'm going to tell you what's going on. You've got prospects you've been calling on. They're looking on, you know, and if they see an organization managing their way through a difficult situation, they're going to be that much more inclined to continue doing business or want to do business with you.
So good. It's so good. Mike, there's this question that I ask all my guests. I'm interested to see what you have to say, especially with this background. But what would you say is the biggest secret that you wish wasn't a secret at all? What's that one thing you wish everybody watching or listening today knew?
I wish they knew how simple it is to have a crisis planning process in place. It's just that easy. You kind of alluded to it earlier, you know, at the very beginning. You've never really talked about this on your podcast. That's not surprising to me, unfortunately. That's not surprising because it's always a back burner thing, you know? And because people put it off. Well, nothing's happened. And when something does happen, we'll deal with it. If people knew how easy it is to put this crisis track process in place that we put in place and used on many of our clients over the years, that put in place a process for them to be ready, it's simple. And then that 3 a.m. phone call is going to be a lot better because now you get the 3 a.m. phone call. It's from your crisis team leader who says, yeah, we got a problem. Here's what we've already done. We've got our messages ready to go out. And here's what we need you to do as the founder CEO. We got a call list for you. And now all of a sudden it's like, yeah, there's a problem, but it's being managed. And I'm going to play my role as the founder of making sure our most important customers and most important prospects know that we are on top of it. And once we're through with this, we're ready to go back to business.
So good. Mike, there's some folks realizing this is an absolute essential. It's not something they have right now. If they're interested in implementing the crisis track system or just learning more about the work that you all do, where can they find out more?
Well, two places. Go to my LinkedIn profile. I think I'm Mike Swenson 1, but just go on LinkedIn and search Mike Swenson and crisis and my site will come up. And there's a ton of content on there that is just there for people to review and read and hopefully gain some insights from regarding crisis preparation and crisis management. And then at crisistrack.com, crisis and then track is TRAK.com. There is a series of 9 videos that you can purchase. And I go through in great detail how to build the crisis plan out. And it you can do it yourself. And if somebody gets involved, you know, they take the time to purchase these videos and they run into a hurdle, just reach out to me on LinkedIn and I'll hop on Zoom with you and we'll talk about it. We're trying to make it as simple as possible. We created this process in the 90s. We used it for 30 years and I always had in my contract I could take it with me when I retired, which I did about 5 years ago. And I finally took it off the back burner myself and started doing something with it because it's something I'm very passionate about. It is the most important PR we did for any client. Was helping them either get ready, prepare for crises in the future, or manage one that they're going through right now. Because if we help them get through a crisis on the other side, everything we did from a positive PR or advertising point of view was saved, was preserved because of the work we did to put them in the best life possible during a crisis.
Fantastic. Well, Mike, it was a privilege having you on, a real honor having you here with us today. Thanks so much for joining. And for those of you watching and listening, you know your time and attention mean the world to us. I hope you got as much out of this conversation as I know I did, and I cannot wait to see you next time. Take care. Scott Ritzheimer here. Thank you so much for listening to the Start, Scale, and Succeed podcast. I hope this episode gave you exactly what you need for your stage right now. If you want to discover what stage you're in, take our 10-question Founders Evolution quiz for free at founderskiz.com. That's founderskiz.com. It'll pinpoint exactly where you are and give you tailored tips to move forward and reach that next level in your journey as a founder. If you got something out of today's episode, would you do us a favor and share it on social media? Just grab a quick screenshot on your phone, text it to a friend, or post it on your favorite platform. Tag us and use hashtag StartScaleSucceed. I'd love to see your posts. You can also head over to scalearchitects.com/podcast to check out more episodes tagged by your stage so you can focus on what matters most right now. Don't forget, subscribe, rate, review. It helps us to reach more founders like you, and it means a ton to me and my team. So let's keep starting, scaling, and succeeding together. I'll see you in the next episode.